Hello and welcome to the first episode for the BS Phys Class podcast. I didn't envision a podcast being the first form of media that I published for my science communication accounts, but here we are. And so just to differentiate between my BS Phys Class accounts, my YouTube is primarily going to be educational videos on physics and astronomy with problem tutorials and Python code examples at the end. And my Twitter is to share science news to followers as well as give updates on what I'm up to on YouTube and now Anchor with this podcast. And so this podcast will primarily just cover astronomy news, as that's what I'm most comfortable covering, and hopefully in the future I'll be able to have some interview episodes with various astronomers I'm in contact with both from my undergrad as well as here at my new job. And my only goal for this podcast is to convey science to the public in a bite-sized and easily accessible manner. And on my end, podcasts are way easier to produce than other forms of media. They can contain lots of information per episode, and Anchor, the app that I'm using, lets me push my finished episodes to multiple podcast apps ranging from Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, just to name a few, all of which I've used at some point. And so what gives me the ethos or credibility to make an astronomy podcast? Well, as of June 2019, just a few months ago, I now have a bachelor's in physics, a minor in astronomy. I've spent the last 3 years working at the Cal Poly Observatory, helping deliver star talks twice a week, and now I'm hired in the Public Information and Outreach Department, PIO, for one of the best infrared observatories in the world. And so all of these are just due to the fact that I'm passionate about science and I'm passionate about communicating it to the public. And in these earlier episodes, I'll try to explain more of the astronomy jargon for listeners who aren't familiar with the field, but hopefully as time goes on, you'll have a better idea of what an AU, a light year, or a parsec are, just to give a few examples, without needing a clarifier. And if you end up enjoying this podcast, consider subscribing to my personal podcast, A Curious Spec, where I just discuss everything else I'm passionate about. And with that, let's jump right in. All right, and so for our first topic, we're going to be starting close to home here on Earth with a story coming from Europe. So SOFIA is the Stratospheric Observatory for Infrared Astronomy. So breaking down that jargon, it's basically a state-of-the-art science plane that conducts infrared observations in the stratosphere. Infrared is a wavelength range with wavelengths longer than red, or in other words, it's less energetic than the visible spectrum, with red being on the very end. And this spectrum ranges from 700 nanometers to 1 millimeter. And most thermal radiation is emitted in the infrared, so you can think of seeing body cams at a science museum. You see the heat maps of people. That's done with infrared technology. And so SOFIA took off from Stuttgart Airport in Germany a few days ago, September 18th, at 1940 CEST. And it was taking its first ever scientific research flight over Europe. It'll be heading out, or it will be, it did, head out north of Germany, south of the Swedish coast, over the Baltic Sea, across Poland, the Czech Republic, Austria, Slovenia, the Adriatic Sea, and Italy, just to name a few of the countries and bodies of water it flew over during its path over a total of 12 countries. And so the home base for SOFIA is in Palmdale, which is in Southern California. So what's significant about this journey? Well, it'll be flying more north than its typical flights, which means that there will be less water vapor in the atmosphere, since SOFIA will be flying closer to the North Pole and water vapor condenses faster in cold air. Ultimately, this means that there will be better seeing for infrared observations because water vapor typically will absorb some of the infrared radiation coming in from space, and that's why it's ideal for infrared astronomy to take place in observatories such as this plane, somewhere where it's high and dry. So I learned that phrase in my observational astronomy class back in undergrad. Where do you want infrared astronomy? Well, basically most, but especially infrared astronomy. Somewhere where it's high and dry. And so, what was SOFIA up to on this flight? Well, one question they're seeking the answer to is the universe really expanding faster than we predict? AKA, is dark energy intervening at an accelerating rate? Or is it a matter of dust extinguishing some of the light that we're trying to detect? Now you're probably thinking, how could dust make us think that the universe is expanding faster than it is? Well, there's a certain phenomenon that we label as standard candles, and we can typically rely on them to always be around the same brightness depending on a certain distance from us. Type 1a supernovae are one such phenomenon, And when astronomers look out into the universe, they notice that the far type 1a supernovae were dimmer than they predicted. So this either means that the standard candles are indeed farther than we expect, it's accelerated beyond our current models and predictions, and we need to readjust that, or perhaps that it's just dust that SOFIA might be able to detect as it's dimming the type 1a supernovae. So it's going to be looking for dust around those. If there isn't any obstructing dust detected, then perhaps this is more evidence that dark energy is helping accelerate the expansion of the universe. Finally, SOFIA will be looking at what I personally researched as an undergrad, and that's active galactic nuclei, or AGNs. And active galactic nuclei are objects that reside in the centers of host galaxies and exhibit energies 100 to 1,000 times greater than the collective light of the host galaxies they occupy. The host galaxy that SOFIA will be looking at is Markarian 231, located 581 million light-years from Earth. Yet, it's also the nearest galaxy that contains a quasar. So just to explain that jargon, 581 million light-years means it'll take 581 million years for light traveling at the speed of light to reach Earth from Markarian 231. Just to clarify some more, the nearest galaxy to us is the Andromeda Galaxy, and that's 2.5 million light-years away. But then our very own Sun, who sometimes we can think is super far away, is only eight light-minutes away. And the Moon is only 1.3 light-seconds away. So 581 million light-years, we're still looking pretty far. So Markarian 231 actually has two black holes in the center. One is around 4 million solar masses, and the other 150 million solar masses. And so to explain that jargon, basically the mass of our Sun is one solar mass. So around each black hole is an accretion disk with two dusty tori, which basically look like cones extending up and down from this disk. And they span from the center, these dusty tori, and are aligned with on the axis of rotation, or they're perpendicular to this accretion disk. With some AGNs, there are relativistic jets that emit both from either of these cones, both of these cones. Maybe one's more dominant, sometimes they're both kind of equal, but it's emitting in the radio wavelengths, and these jets are due to ionized matter being accelerated to relativistic speeds. And the question that SOFIA will be asking in regards to Markarian 231 is, what role do these dusty tori play in generating or enabling these radio jets that emanate out of them? Their hypothesis is that there are magnetic fields in the dust-laden tori that help trigger radio jet formation. So SOFIA will be using the high-resolution airborne wideband camera, or HAWC+, HAWC plus maybe, to measure magnetic fields in the infrared wavelength range for the dusty tori of Markarian 231. Now we're going to be focusing our attention out into the solar system, because for the first time, we have detected an interstellar comet. Now note, this does not mean that this is the first interstellar comet to ever enter our solar system. It's just the first one that we've been able to detect with our modern instruments and programs, because usually our programs have been excluding objects with hyperbolic orbits. And so hyperbolic just means you think of a circle, then you stretch that a little further, you think of an ellipse, you stretch that further and disconnect some of the ends, and it just comes in one way and out the other. That's a hyperbolic orbit. And so this object initially was labeled as C/2019Q4, but lately it's been relabeled or given another ID, which is 2I for interstellar slash Borisov, because it was discovered on August 30th, 2019, by a Russian amateur astronomer with the last name Borisov. The Gemini Observatory actually captured a color image of this comet using the Gemini Multi-Object Spectrograph, or GMOS, on the morning of September 10th. They had received info about it about 3 a.m., and they were on the object by 4:45 that night. And this is an example of time domain astronomy, but I'll probably dedicate a part of a future episode just to discuss what that term means. But anyways, the object has been classified as a comet,
since it has a pronounced tail seen in the images. And that means that, the pronounced tail is indicative of outgassing. And it's currently hard to see right now as it's on a hyperbolic path close to the sun, but it will be getting brighter in coming months, but will eventually be dissipating from our view by December 2020. Now, obviously, this is most likely not the first interstellar comet, as I said earlier, but we have had interstellar objects before, such as Oumuamua, which in Hawaiian stands for the first distant messenger. And so you might have been thinking of that when I mentioned interstellar visitor. And when I made this recording last week, I actually was saying that this was an asteroid-like object, but I heard one of the directors of one of the telescopes, one of the observatories here on the Big Island, say that they actually do believe now, at least some in the astronomy community, that Oumuamua might be a comet. It just doesn't have outgassing. But they think since it's accelerating its way out of the solar system, it is losing mass, accelerating. So somehow they just think they can't detect the outgassing, but some people are starting to reclassify it. And so Oumuamua was in the news around July this year after some online UFO enthusiasts were suggesting it was an alien spacecraft due to its elongated shape. But astronomers retorted and quelled such theories. But even though that was in the news more recently, it actually was discovered in 2017 by Haleakala Observatory over on Maui. But unfortunately, by now, it's already on its way out of our solar system, so there's not much time left to study it. But with our new interstellar comet, we'll at least have the next 16 months to learn as much as we can. All right, and so now we're going to be probing deep into the center of our galaxy at an object known as Sagittarius A star. And this object, by watching the orbits of several other objects around it over decades, is deduced to be a supermassive black hole that is located 26,000 light years away, is 2.6 million solar masses, and is confined to a region with a diameter of 260 astronomical units. So to explain this jargon, an astronomical unit, or AU, is the distance between the Sun and Earth. So from the Sun to Pluto, it's roughly 40 AU. And from one side of the solar system to when Pluto is on the other side, at least going from Pluto to Pluto, is 80 AU. So therefore, Sagittarius A star is like stuffing 2.6 million of our suns, at least that much mass, into an area that's roughly three times bigger than our solar system, Pluto to Pluto side. So now keep that in mind, because the black holes in Markarian 231 were 4 million solar masses and 150 million solar masses. So compared to that, our black hole is actually pretty small, and according to Dr. Andrea Ghez from the UCLA Galactic Center Group, our black hole is usually a pretty quiet, wimpy black hole on a diet. So now why are we talking about a wimpy black hole? Well, according to the data analyzed from this year, it may not be on a diet anymore. A paper led by the UCLA Galactic Center Group, mentioned before, analyzed more than 13,000 observations of Sagittarius A star across 133 nights since 2003 and noted that Sagittarius A star was 75 times brighter than usual on this May 13th of this year. Or in another perspective, it's twice as bright as the next brightest observation they've ever seen it. So, there's actually been a total of three unprecedented changes just this year in brightness. So what's causing these brightness changes? Well, typically it's due to radiation of gas and dust falling into the black hole. So their question is Sagittarius A star entering a new phase or consumption rate? Or is this just an anomaly of various stuff falling in lately and it'll go back to normal? And so they've suggested three possible explanations if this is not a new era. SO2 has made its closest approach to Sagittarius A star back in the summer of 2018. And so SO2 is one of the orbiting objects, and it launched a large quantity of gas back in the summer of 2018, and that could be reaching the black hole this year. Maybe that's what we're observing. Or perhaps G2, which is believed to be binary stars, could have been stripped of its outer layer when it made its closest approach back in 2014. Or finally, we could be observing the death of large asteroids falling into the black hole. And now, before we leave the story, the last thought or reminder I want to leave you with is the fact that Sagittarius A star is 26,000 light years away, which means that all these things that we're observing right now actually happened 26,000 years ago. So if Sagittarius A star is entering a new era, it would have done so a long time ago, and we're just watching it unfold now. Our last story is about some new technology coming from Sandia National Labs. And so there, researchers have been able to reduce the noise of infrared detectors from between 10 to 100 times by developing tiny gold microantennas to concentrate the infrared light onto the detector. And so IR detectors work when heat is absorbed by a detector material and is then converted to electrical signals to be put together to form an image. But with their new design, it directs the light efficiently, and they're able to reduce the thickness of the detector material from 5 to 10 microns, which is typical with today's technology, to a fraction of a micron. And just to explain this jargon, well, a micron, a human hair, is 75 microns wide, and now this detector material is a fraction of 1 micron. So how does making a detector layer thinner actually reduce the noise? Well, it's all due to a phenomenon called dark current, which leads to spontaneously created electrons that are also detected and added to the image, which then only provides noise and reduces the quality of our detection. And this is something that I personally struggled with during my undergrad when I was doing research on our Mead LX600 telescope, and it was due to the CCD. So even with the telescope completely closed off from light, if you run the camera and take a 30-second exposure, you have the cap on the end, you're going to see counts detected on your image. And so in optical observations like I was doing, one of the needed calibration images for the night was referred to as darks. And it's where you took a closed-off dark exposure, just like what I described, for a time equal to how long you'll be observing your science objects later on. And then you subtract those dark current counts from your image at a later time. And so any technology that helps reduce dark current and improve image quality is one that I can get behind. And so with that last story, thank you for listening. This is just a prototype just to see if Anchor works, kind of a rough preliminary episode for future episodes that I'd want to make on BS Phys class. And I don't know, hopefully I make some episodes in the future as a side hobby. And hopefully you tuned in last week, not on here, but just in general, the astronomy community. It was Black Hole Week. So if not, go look back. NASA released tons of cool video GIFs, demos, and stuff like that. And Gemini was releasing Black Hole info as well. So look them up and hope you tune in. Stay tuned and keep an eye out.